Hello and welcome to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds. My name is John Coe. I am in Flagstaff, and I will be your volunteer reader for today, reading articles that were published in the Arizona Capital Times on or about July 11th, 2025. Headline: No Labels Party Candidates Allowed to Run Despite Complaint from Party Officials. Written by Howard Fisher and published in the Arizona Capital Times on July 11th, 2025. Arizonans are free to run for any office they want under the No Labels banner, even if party officials don't give them permission. In a new ruling Friday, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals rejected arguments by attorneys for the party that it alone should get to decide in which races it participates. Judge Salvador Mendoza, writing for the unanimous panel, said Arizona's interests in having people participate in the political process outweighs any burden on the No Labels party to decide who gets to run. Friday's ruling most immediately benefits the 36,785 Arizonans who have registered with the No Labels party, a recognized political party in Arizona. Unless overturned, it ensures that they can submit petitions to run for a variety of partisan political offices, from governor and members of Congress to the state legislature. The opportunity to run may also reinvigorate the party, whose registration was close to 19,000 before a federal judge ruled last year that party officials had the power to prevent registrants from seeking office under the party name. The decision sets a legally binding precedent limiting the top officials from any recognized political party from keeping adherents from running under its banner, and that could prove important if Elon Musk follows through with his plans for his new America Party and gets ballot recognition in Arizona. Quote, "The right to vote belongs to party members, not the party leadership, and that is where it will remain," Mendoza wrote. Quote, "No Labels attempts to assert top-down control by dictating who may be on its ballot," he said, "but a party does not have monolithic control over its own members and supporters." There was no immediate response from officials of the No Labels party. The party was founded in 2009 with the stated goal of combating what it calls the polarized political climate that has led to the most prominent voices often found the farthest from the political center. It had the specific goal of creating a unity ticket to run in the 2024 presidential race if the two parties selected unreasonably divisive presidential nominees. It submitted the necessary paperwork and gained ballot status in the state of Arizona. That, in turn, resulted in a half dozen individuals filing statements of interest to run as No Labels candidates in various other races. The party then sued Secretary of State Adrian Fontes to keep those names off the ballot. Fontes fought the lawsuit, arguing that the party's, quote, "freedom of association ends where the fundamental political rights of others begin," included the right to vote. Last year, United States District Court Judge John Tucci sided with the party, blocking Fontes from accepting any requests by any individual, including those registered with the No Labels party, to be a candidate in the 2024 state primary election. Fontes appealed. In the new ruling Friday, Mendoza acknowledged that political parties have a First Amendment right to associate with whomever they please. Quote, "A party may limit its membership as it wishes and choose a candidate selection process that will, in its view, produce the nominee who best represents its political platform," the appellate judge wrote. Still, he said, there are limits. Quote, "When the state allows a political party to have a role in the election process, the state acquires a legitimate governmental interest in ensuring the fairness of the party's nominating process, enabling it to prescribe what that process must be," Mendoza said, and that, he said, is broad. "Ensuring voter and candidate participation is undoubtedly a legitimate state interest," the judge said. But, he said, it goes beyond that. That includes eliminating fraud and corruption. quote, to maintain the integrity of the political process, states may adopt election codes to remove party nominating decisions from the infamous smoke-filled rooms and place them instead in the hands of a party's rank and file, thereby destroying the corrupt alliance between wealthy special interests and the political machine, Mendoza wrote. Quote, one way to limit the opportunity for fraud and corruption is through a direct primary, which prevents party leadership from controlling nominating decisions while promoting democratic decision-making. The appellate judges also brushed aside the claim by party officials that allowing people to run as No Labels candidates would interfere with their objective of focusing exclusively on selecting and promoting candidates for president and vice president. Quote, this objective appears illusory, Mendoza wrote. He pointed out that even after gaining ballot status in Arizona and elsewhere for the 2024 election, it didn't even run any candidates. Anyway, the judge said, he doesn't see any real burden on party officials who want to make clear in future elections that while candidates are running for multiple offices on the No Labels ticket, the party itself is only supportive of its nominees for president and vice president. And there's something else. Arizona automatically sends out ballots to anyone who is on the state's active early voter list and has made such a request. And in the 2024 primary, that included members of the No Labels party. The only thing is, what they got from Fontes was a blank ballot, as Tucci's ruling barred the secretary from including the names of those seeking to run for other offices under the No Labels banner. Quote, Arizona's interest in avoiding voter confusion is legitimate, and the secretary's action in accepting eligible candidates' statements of interest serves to avoid such confusion, Mendoza wrote. Quote, this interest is also compelling because it is extraordinarily confusing to a party's members to receive blank ballots even after the qualifying person explained that the party would be represented on the ballot, he continued. Arizona's election law is narrowly tailored to advance the interest of avoiding voter confusion because it prevents a situation where blank ballots are sent to voters, at least where there are willing candidates. This isn't the first litigation involving the No Labels Party and its presence in Arizona. The Arizona Democratic Party filed suit in 2023 to keep the party, and more to the point, its candidates off the 2024 ballot. Attorneys for the Democrats argued that No Labels did not meet the legal definition of a party, citing, among other things, its refusal to disclose donors, which is a requirement of all parties. But Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Catherine Cooper said that No Labels had met all the legal requirements to qualify for ballot status. Headline: Governor Hobbs seeks federal reimbursement for Arizona's border costs. Written by Howard Fisher and published in the Arizona Capital Times on July 10, 2025. As Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs blasted then-Governor Doug Ducey in 2022 when he spent about $100 million erecting a wall of storage containers along the border, calling it a publicity stunt. And her assessment continued after the state was forced to remove them at a cost of $70 million more, following the Biden administration's filing of a lawsuit which charged that the barriers were illegal. But Hobbs, who replaced Ducey in January 2023, said she now wants the federal government to reimburse Arizona for all the money spent by her predecessor. The governor noted that the recently approved federal legislation, originally dubbed the Big Beautiful Bill, has $10 billion available for grants to states that have paid for border barriers or other security measures since January 20, 2021. That date is not random. That is the day that Joe Biden was inaugurated. The provision came largely at the behest of senators from Texas who claimed it spent more than $11 billion for border security. However, Hobbs said that on July 10th, while she's still studying the federal legislation, she does believe Arizona is entitled to its share, too. Quote, I can't imagine us not asking, the governor said. Quote, Arizonans paid nearly $200 million for putting up that container wall and taking it down and storing it, she said. I think we deserve some of those funds back. Hobbs did not address the fact that the wall of containers was removed to settle the lawsuit with the Biden administration, which had declared the construction illegal. But she did point out that all this happened under the prior Ducey administration and over her objections. Quote, I believe I've said many times that my predecessor misspent that money, the governor said, but that, she said, is irrelevant. Quote, hopefully the feds will reimburse us, Hobbs said. And what does the former governor think of the bid for reimbursement of his would-be border barrier? Quote, let's hope she uses the funds for border security and public safety as it was intended, said Daniel Scarpinato, the former chief of staff for Ducey, responding on his behalf. But given her track record, we won't be holding our breath. At the heart of the issue was the Republican-controlled legislature's decision to approve $335 million in the Arizona Border Security Fund in 2022. Those dollars came with strings attached, including requirements that they be spent on erecting a barrier at the border. Ducey used $95 million of that money to pay Ashbrit Management and Logistics to obtain and use old storage containers to erect a border barrier with a double-high wall. The Biden administration responded by citing a 1907 proclamation by then Theodore Roosevelt, President of the United States, declaring a 60-foot-wide strip just inside the border belongs to the federal government rather than to the state of Arizona, and that was precisely where Ducey started putting up the containers in Cochise and Yuma counties. In the end, Ducey agreed to remove the containers at a cost to the state, plus the state paid another $2.1 million to the Forest Service to remediate the damage done by the containers. This resulted in the dismissal of all pending litigation. Hobbs said the money that she will seek may extend beyond the cost of erecting and dismantling the border wall. In late 2023, she billed the Biden administration for $512.5 million to cover what she believed the state had spent on border security, quote, including migrant transportation, drug interdiction, and law enforcement. Quote, I look forward to your prompt response, she wrote to the president. The state has yet to get that cash. In fact, Hobbs said that the total is now a lot more than her original request, although she had no specific figures. That leaves the question of whether the money in the newly enacted federal legislation covers these costs, too, and not just the border barrier. Quote, we're still sorting through all of the implications of the bill, she said, including not just reimbursement of border expenses, but also, quote, the things that are going to harm Arizonans, the things that are going to help Arizonans. Quote, I don't know the answer to that yet, Hobbs said. You're listening to the Arizona Capital Times on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds of Arizona has been providing information access since 1979, and you can always listen to our live stream at sunsounds.org. Headline, Turquoise Alert, Arizona's New System to Find Missing People, written by Howard Fisher and published in the Arizona Capital Times on July 10th, 2025. Arizona is finally ready to roll out its new turquoise alert system designed to seek the public's help when some people go missing. The state's participation in the system, approved by lawmakers earlier this year, was originally billed as helping to find Native Americans who have gone missing. It was named Emily's Law to honor Emily Pike, whose remains were found in February more than 100 miles from a group home that she left in Mesa earlier in the month. But Captain Tom Neve of the State Department of Public Safety said it is being implemented to allow these alerts, electronic highway signs, media broadcasts, and cell phone notifications to be sent anytime someone goes missing under suspicious circumstances. Quote, they don't have to be an indigenous person, he said. Quote, but ultimately, we do know that the plight of missing, murdered indigenous people is real, Neve said. And certainly, we've had people taken off of tribes in Arizona that the family didn't know about. More to the point, it is designed to fill the gap between amber alerts, which are triggered when a child is believed to have been abducted, and silver alerts, which are meant to find those 65 and older who have gone missing, usually because of some cognitive impairment. So far, there have been no official turquoise alerts issued. Neve said the guidance is being finalized still. Quote, it doesn't say it has to be an abduction, he says, but ultimately abductions of between those ages would qualify. But Neve said it can be broader than that. quote, certainly, if they're in the presence of a dangerous person, they went missing under suspicious or unexplained circumstances. And basically, local law enforcement has exhausted all the resources they have in trying to locate that person. Then they can make a request to DPS to put out a turquoise alert for that person, he said. And there's some tweaking that may need to be done as the system is rolled out and messages are broadcast over the air and cell phones are alerted. Quote, those are things we're going to work through with our partners to make sure, number one, that the alerts are effective in how they go out and are appropriate, and two, we're not turning the public off by desensitizing or not having enough information when we're pushing those out, Neve said. What that means, he said, is not creating an alert without having important information like the last known location, direction of travel, what they were wearing, and with whom they might be traveling. Quote, those things are critical for us to share with the public so that they can help us find those people, Neve said. Existing kinds of alerts, he said, have proven to be very successful. Quote, in most years, the recovery for amber alerts is 100% when one is done, Neve said. When it comes to silver alerts, we're at 98% of them being located and found. He said he would expect turquoise alerts to have a similar success rate to those of silver alerts. Still, Neve said, he couldn't provide actual data about how many of those people were found because of the alerts versus people who were located through other means. Headline: Arizona Republicans defend abortion laws in court fight. Written by Howard Fisher and published in the Arizona Capital Times on July 8, 2025. The top two Republican state legislators contend there's nothing unconstitutional about making a woman wait 24 hours before getting an abortion. In new court filings, House Speaker Steve Montenegro and Senate President Warren Peterson also want a judge to uphold existing requirements for in-person counseling, a mandatory ultrasound, a ban on prescribing abortion medication by phone, and a law making it a crime for doctors to terminate a pregnancy because of a genetic defect or the sex of a child. Andrew Gould, representing the pair, contends that the statutes, which have been challenged by two abortion providers and the Arizona Medical Association, do not run afoul of Proposition 139. That measure, approved in November, enshrines a right to terminate a pregnancy into the Arizona Constitution. Gould, however, points out that the ballot measure does not allow restrictions if they are, quote, justified by a compelling state interest that is achieved by the least restrictive means, and he says the laws being challenged fit within that restriction. Even if Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Greg Como doesn't buy that argument, Gould has a fallback position. He said the case is not ripe for consideration. There is no record of anyone being denied an abortion due to these laws in the more than 7 months since Proposition 139 was adopted. And if that doesn't work, Gould is telling Como there is no chance the doctors who filed the lawsuit are in any danger of being prosecuted. He pointed out that Governor Katie Hobbs issued an executive order more than a year ago saying that only Attorney General Chris Mays has the power to prosecute violations of abortion laws, and Mays herself has disavowed any interest in bringing any charges against anyone. In fact, Mays, whose job it is to defend the laws already on the books in Arizona, has refused to do so. She is instead siding with the challengers in concluding that Proposition 139 makes these abortion restrictions unconstitutional. That leaves it up to Montenegro and Peterson to defend the laws, and the outcome of the lawsuit could affect what restrictions and hurdles remain for those seeking an abortion. Hanging in the balance is the fundamental right to an abortion that voters approved by a 3-2 margin. More to the point, that voter-approved language specifically says the state cannot deny, restrict, or interfere with that right prior to fetal viability, generally considered to be between 22 and 24 weeks, absent that compelling state interest. Gould said that the problems with the challenges start with the fact that they are seeking to void certain restrictions for both pre- and post-viability abortions. Proposition 139, however, is much narrower in its limits on laws governing post-viability abortions, saying the state has no right to interfere if the health care provider has determined the procedure is necessary to protect the life or health of the mother. So that, Gould said, makes the challenge too broad. But the heart of his argument on behalf of Montenegro and Peterson goes to his claim that even in cases of pre-viability abortions, the laws that were already on the books when Prop 139 was approved do not run afoul of its provisions. Many are tied to that 24-hour waiting period. Doctors in that first visit are supposed to provide what the challengers call, quote, stigmatizing and irrelevant information to the patient, like the probable anatomical and physiological characteristics of the fetus, the fact that medical assistance benefits may be available for prenatal childbirth and neonatal care, and that the father of the unborn child is financially liable for support even if he has offered to pay for the abortion. Challengers question the need to provide such information to the patient. Quote, in effect, these requirements force patients seeking abortion care to make multiple trips to their health care provider to obtain an abortion, regardless of that patient's distance from the provider. Reasons for seeking an abortion, medical circumstances, how certain they are, or how advanced their pregnancy is, the challengers argue. That means taking time away from work or school, doubling the time and expense of transportation, and even potentially requiring a hotel and arrangements for child care. It also provides time for mandatory ultrasound. Gould said none of that runs afoul of Proposition 139. Quote, a modest 24-hour waiting period enhances informed decision-making and fortifies long-term psychological health by ensuring that the pregnant woman can absorb, reflect on, and incorporate information learned during the counseling session and ultrasound into a deliberate decision to continue or to terminate the pregnancy, he told the judge. Gould also cited National Abortion Federation guidelines that say the gestational age of a fetus must, quote, be verified by ultrasonography for any fetus estimated to be more than 14 weeks old. He also is defending the legality of a requirement for an in-person visit versus the use of telemedicine, where a doctor can consult with a patient electronically and determine whether to prescribe abortion medications. Quote, the state has a compelling interest in ensuring that a pregnant woman is not coerced into taking an abortion pill by another person, such as a spouse, partner, abuser, or trafficker, Gould said. Quote, the provider lacks the ability to do so if the provider communicates with the patient exclusively through remote means. The response filed for Montenegro and Peterson also takes a particular swat at the effort to strike down laws that make it illegal for a doctor to perform an abortion knowing that the procedure is sought based on sex or the race of the child. And a parallel law, also already on the books for the initiative, imposes criminal penalties for doctors who terminate a pregnancy, quote, knowing that the abortion is sought solely because of a genetic or generic abnormality of the child. That, Gould said, makes no sense. Quote, they effectively contend that Prop 139 gives doctors and patients absolute discretion over when to obtain an abortion, no matter the motivations or the circumstances, he wrote. They effectively contend that the right to discriminate, to terminate a pregnancy based on race or sex or disability, is now embodied in the state's basic charter, immune from legislative, executive, or judicial regulation at any level of the state government. Anyway, Gould said, those existing laws do not violate the initiative. Quote, the court reasonably could conclude that Prop 139's fundamental right to an abortion protects the decision whether to bear a child, but does not guarantee a right to select which child a woman will bear, especially when that decision rests on expressly discriminatory grounds, he told Cuomo. Quote, there is a difference between I don't want a child and I want a child but only a male child, or I only want children whose genes predict success in life. Gould also said the restrictions do not prohibit a woman from having an abortion, quote, even for discriminatory reasons. Nor, he said, does it bar doctors from performing the procedure when the patient has not yet expressed a reason. Only when a doctor knowingly participates in a woman's decision to terminate a pregnancy for discriminatory reasons is the law violated, Gould said. No date has been set for the hearing. Headline: New animal cruelty law requires medical attention for pets in Arizona. written by Howard Fisher and published in the Arizona Capital Times on July 8, 2025. Come September 26th, it's finally going to be a crime in Arizona to fail to get proper medical attention for your pet. Turns out it's not currently illegal. The gap in the law became apparent in 2023 when law enforcement officials in Maricopa County said their ability to act was limited despite reports that a Chandler woman was hoarding dogs. When police finally did get a search warrant, they found nearly five dozen dogs, including five found dead and kept in a freezer. Not all the remaining animals survived. What all that led to was SB 1658, which, when it takes effect, adds a new provision to existing laws on animal cruelty. It will now include intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly failing to provide medical attention to prevent, quote, unreasonable suffering to a domestic animal under that person's control. Quote, this bill importantly closes dangerous loopholes which have allowed for prolonged suffering of these animals, Governor Katie Hobbs said at a ceremonial signing at the Arizona Humane Society. Attending the event was Jerry, one of the dogs rescued from the Chandler home. He requires a harness to support his back legs, but otherwise appears happy and healthy. Still, what made it to the governor's desk wasn't exactly what had been sought by Senator Shauna Bolick. As originally crafted by the Phoenix Republican, it also included provisions making it illegal to fail to provide food appropriate for the species and fit for consumption, as well as water suitable for drinking, but those had to be jettisoned in order to get votes for the measure. The senator said on July 7th that she did not know whether she would seek to get those items included in provisions in future legislation, but Bolick said that what survived is still significant. Quote, even though this bill was watered down in the House and from the Senate's original version, the remaining parts of the bill still provide law enforcement with the necessary tools to act more quickly without obtaining a warrant, she said. You've been listening to the Arizona Capital Times, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you for listening.